Well, as the story goes in John chapter 4, there was a woman. There was a woman that came to a well. Now, the funny thing is, this is something that she probably did every single day. I mean, they didn't have running water, so if she wanted to have water for the day, she had to come. And the thing is I'd like to ask you a question. What was her name? We don't know. What did she look like? We don't know. I mean, we don't have any of the things that we usually associate with, and we say we want to know somebody, that we first thing we look at, what they look like, what's their name, what they do. We're told very little about this woman. All we're told is, A, she was a Samaritan. B, she was a woman. And C, she was a woman that was in trouble. And she was coming to this well to get water to live just another day. But on this day when she came to the well, she found somebody there waiting for her. And his name was Jesus. And when she left that well that day, everything changed for her. She was not the same person she was when she arrived at that well. So here's what I want to know. What happened at the well? What is it that this woman found standing there, a place that she had been every day of her life probably? What did she find on that day that changed everything about her forever? Now, in the story, I want you to get it. Jesus equals the church. So when we look at this story, whatever happened at the well, what the church is supposed to be doing is what Jesus did. Okay? And the woman is the world, not the planet, not the territory, not the water. It's the people in the world. So when we look at this story, what we're supposed to be looking at is how Jesus approached the woman so that then us as the church, we can turn around and figure out how we are supposed to go about approaching the world with the same message that Jesus gave her. And what was his message? That person you're looking for? That Messiah that's supposed to fix everything? What did Jesus say? I am he. That's me. Guilty as charged. I'm the one you're looking for. And so we're looking at this woman at the well experience because we are going to try to redefine our mission as a church. And we redefined it with these words. And again, these words were chosen very carefully. But this is the mission statement as you now see it on the bulletin and what the leadership of this church sees as the purpose and the mission of our church. Our purpose is to give glory to God by meeting people where they are, sharing Jesus with them in a meaningful way, and encourage them to live in a growing relationship with him. And so I want to say last week, because that's what my notes say, but 2 weeks ago we began this sermon series, and we looked at what was the first thing Jesus did. Well, he went to where she was. And that meant a lot of things because it meant he went to a place that he didn't normally go because no Jew went through Samaria. It meant that he didn't go, and when he got to Samaria, he didn't go look for the religious place. He went for the place that he knew she would be. How did he know? Well, because he's Jesus, he knows everything. But specifically, how did he know? Because at some point, everybody's got to come to that well. Everybody there had to come there because everybody had to have water. And he picked a time and a place that he was going to meet her, and he went there. And well, the question becomes, what does that mean to us? Well, when you look at our little ring picture, this is the picture that I actually introduced a year after I got here, and every now and then we flash it up on the screen and we show it to you to remind you, to give you that visual image of how you go about putting our vision, our mission into place. We start in the community, and then we want to move the community to the crowd. That means we just invite them to church, and we move the crowd to the connected. We teach them about Jesus. And we move the connected to the committed. That means we actually get them to make a commitment and actually have them establish themselves as a follower of Jesus. And you can kind of think about these sermons They're the little spaces that fit between the rings. You see, to get them from the community to the crowd, you do understand, you have to go into the community. You actually have to go out and find people to bring them here, because you can't just stand out on the stoop and yell, come to church, and the cars are going to stop. You actually have to get out and go where people are. That's the only way it works. And so I guess now we need to know is, well, we've got them here, so we understand we got to go out and invite them. Once we get, what do we do next? I mean, that was enough, right? I got them sitting in the seat. And so that means all is good, all is perfect with the world. And well, no. Just getting them to come to church doesn't solve anything, because eventually they'll go somewhere else. We have to figure out how to go about engaging them. And that's where that next phrase in our mission statement comes in. Share Jesus in a meaningful way. Now, again, I told you there was a lot of conversation, and we probably should have recorded it just for the fun of it, but there was a lot of conversation about what words we were going to use when we put this mission statement together, because believe it or not, share and meaningful wasn't even in the original draft. These kind of came in later, and that they really belong here, because you got to understand what these words mean. Share means give a portion of something to another or others. So the idea of share is I've got something that's mine that I possess, and I'm going to share it with somebody else. It means I'm going to actually give you part of what I have. Now, in our mission statement, you understand what we're trying to share is? It's the right answer for every church question. We're trying to share Jesus. There you go. So we're trying to share Jesus. That's, by the way, that's something one of my teenagers told me. Every time you ask him a question, he always answered Jesus. He said, because I know I'll be right at least 50% of the time. If I'm in church, Jesus is always the right answer. Just give it enough, you'll get it right. So we're here to share Jesus with others. Now, you do understand that means that the assumption here is that you have Jesus for yourself. So if you don't have, if you've never established that relationship with Jesus, then really you have nothing to share. So really, you're kind of back at the position of the woman, not the church. And so that's okay. You can still be at that position, because we need you to understand we are here to share Jesus with you, to let you understand who Jesus is. But that second word is also important, meaningful. Having a serious, important, or useful quality or purpose is what meaningful means. Now, am I supposed to deliver the message in the way that it means something to me, or in a way that it means something to the person I'm giving it to? Obviously, if it's going to be meaningful, I have to design the message in a way that they get it. In other words, just because it means something to me doesn't mean that it means a darn thing to them, because when they hear it, they've got to be able to process it. It's got to be meaningful, and what's meaningful to me isn't always meaningful to the world that's out there. I love that clip of the girl that's talking into the microphone, because what does she say? To be known is to be loved, and to be loved is to be known. In other words, if we're actually going to share things in a meaningful way, we can't just meet them and run. We have to get to know them. We've got to get involved in their life. And, well, I guess that brings us to the question. This woman at the well that Jesus met, what did she need? Okay, well, to do that, maybe first we better define the word need, because need doesn't always mean what we think it means. A need is a required item or action because it's essential or very important. We usually think of need as if I don't have it, I'm going to die. Well, that's a form of a need, but you do understand there are some things that are very important. You can live physically if you don't have them, but if you don't have them, then your life just isn't complete, so it's very important. So we have to go out and get to know people and get to know their needs, those things that are vital to them, okay, and those things that are important to them. Now, there are several kinds of needs, and we can put them in three basic categories. The first thing is we have basic physical needs. We know these. Food, clothes, shelter, and our society, transportation, health. These are all things that are physical to us and that we need to have them. You can only go so long without them before your life begins to unravel. And you say, well, why is transportation on there? Well, because in our society, if you don't have transportation, notice I didn't say you had to have a vehicle. I said the word transportation. If you don't have transportation, eventually your life does not work well, especially here where there's not a lot of public transportation. But you do understand, these are vital things in our life. And just so we don't dismiss them, understand the Bible talks a great deal about physical needs and how the church is supposed to talk about them and work with them. James tells us in James chapter 2, verse 16, if there's a basic physical need, then it trumps everything. He says, if one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? What good is it if I go up there and tell them about eternity and heaven and how things are going to be great if they're starving today? What good is it if I tell them that, you know what, I've got the answer for all of your problems? They're like, well, what I need is a blanket. But we can't answer that question. I mean, if I can't meet the physical needs, then you understand I'm as far as I can go. It trumps everything. If they have a physical need, they're not interested in listening to anything else except for that. We've got to pay attention to that. And just so you know, Jesus stressed meeting physical needs. Oh man, how many times have we ran through this story, Matthew chapter 25, it says, they will also answer, Lord, they being the people who thought they knew about who Christ was. And it says, they will also answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger in need of clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? Jesus said, he will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. So whatever you didn't do for them, you didn't do for me. He tied this idea together and the fact that, you know what? We need to focus on some of these physical needs because if we're not meeting those, then you know what? We're not going to meet anything. You see, Jesus had a habit of meeting physical needs, did he not? You understand that was the whole purpose behind healing. Healing is a physical need. My physical body is broken, and so I need something fixed. That's physical. Jesus fed the 5,000, so he met their needs physically. I mean, God had a thing for meeting physical needs. Remember back in the Old Testament? What did he do? He provided manna from heaven. He provided water from the ground. So this idea that God and Jesus, they were always focused on the physical because they do understand the idea that if I have a physical need, if there's something out there I'm lacking physically, then I can never talk to you spiritually. It just won't register. You can't get there from here. So that's not the only set of needs, though. There are also emotional needs. Now, these are important. Things like acceptance or belonging, companionship, guilt, shame. These are all things that are on the inside of them that, you know what, if I'm struggling with these, I'm not interested in talking about Jesus either. If I'm dealing with lonely in my life, physical loneliness, then you do understand I don't care that you're telling me that there's somebody out here I can't see, I can't touch, I can't talk to, I can't hear them. That's not going to solve my problem. You have to be willing to solve the other problem first, and that is you have to get into my life and solve lonely. Well, how do you solve lonely? You have to get into somebody's life. If I'm dealing with guilt because I've got so much in my past that I just can't deal with it, you know what? Jesus is the ultimate answer, but you understand I have to get into what is making you feel so guilty, what is driving you. That's going to take time. If I'm lacking companionship, they don't need a puppy. They need another person in their life to come alongside and be that companion. You do understand all the way back in Genesis, you know what was the first thing that was wrong with creation? It wasn't sin. The first thing that was wrong with creation is when God looked out upon Adam and said, you know what? It's not good for man to be alone. We can't leave him all by himself. And he wasn't by himself. God was there, but even in that perfect relationship, God said, you know what? They aren't designed to be by themselves. They have emotional needs, and we have to get to that level also. Now, there are spiritual needs. And I'm saving those. Those are for next week. We have a week of sermons that we have to make up. We're not going to take them out of this sermon series. This series was too important that we get all the pieces in there. The next sermon series is about prayer, and I promise you I'm not taking pieces out of that one. So we'll make up the sermon sometime. I got it figured out between now and Easter. We'll make up the snow day that we missed, okay? We're okay with that. So there are spiritual needs. We'll talk about the spiritual needs next week, but we have to talk about meeting needs. I mean, it's enough to say that they have needs. It's enough to say that they're hungry and that they have blank and that we need to give this and do that and time and companionship. But here's what I need to know. I need you to know. All, should have underlined that, highlighted it, made it bigger, red, put parens around it, something to make. All needs require resources to be met. Well, what do you mean? Let me boil it down for you. Money or time? There isn't a single solitary need that exists for humanity that does not require either money or time to be met. That means if I'm going to meet a physical need, what is probably I'm going to need the most of? Money. Because if I'm going to meet a physical need, that means I have to have the things to meet the need, so I have to go out and buy the things, or if you're talented, make it, but then you still have to buy the raw materials. But you understand, you have to get the resources together to go and meet the needs. So those kind of needs take money. If I'm going to meet the emotional needs, then you understand that means it's going to take time. That means I've got to carve out a part of my schedule to get involved in people's lives, but I can't meet any needs if I'm not willing to give either one of these. Now, why is that important to us as the church? Because if our goal is to share Christ, then we know we can't share Christ until we meet needs, and we know that meeting needs takes time or money, that means, guess what? In my budget of money and time, I have to be willing to start carving out time to meet people's needs. Because if I don't do that, then we're never going to ever get to the spiritual ones, because the other ones are just going to keep in the way and they're going to be a barrier. So what did the woman need? Well, that's a great question. I mean, here she was. We're not told much about her, but we are told all about her needs. That's the funny thing. We get no physical description, no name, no nothing, no address, no way to send them a thank you card or a birthday card. But you know what? We do learn all about the needs. And here's the good news. From every indication, her physical needs were met. She had clothes, assuming. I mean, she was out in public, so I'm assuming she was dressed. She didn't mention being hungry. She needed water, but that was a need she could meet herself. And if it's a need you can meet yourself, that's not really a need. That's just something that she had to go do. That was a task on her list. So all of her physical needs were met. That's the reason there was no miracle here. Jesus did not have to worry about fish and loaves of bread. He didn't have to worry about doing a healing. He didn't have to do any of that kind of stuff because this woman, she wasn't physically broken. And I think that's important that she's here, because a lot of times we get so consumed with the physical brokenness that we forget that she was broken much deeper. In the emotional section, where do I even start? This woman, she was isolated. Here she was at midday, the hottest part of the day, when nobody else would be at the well. And she was there, and she was there on purpose, because she did not want any more human relationship. She'd had enough. She had built her little wall around her and built her nice little safe world, and even though she wasn't very happy in it, she was at least safe in it. You realize that's what people that isolate themselves are after. They're tired of being hurt. They're tired of people taking advantage of them. They're tired of being let down. And so they build themselves a wall around them and say, you know what, I'm just going to stay inside my wall, just me and the space with me, because I'm not happy, but I won't get hurt. She was dealing with relationship issues. What did Jesus tell her? You had five husbands. Now, we don't know if it was divorce or whether all her husbands died. We don't know what happened to her husbands. But we knew she had five of them. And she had kind of given up on the idea of husband, because now she wasn't getting married anymore. She said, fine, since I just keep going through them, I just won't worry about the formality, and I'll just go live with the guy, and then it'll all be good. And so she had relationship issues. She didn't know how to have real relationships. I mean, you just can't go through five relationships like that without having some issues. It's impossible. I mean, I only have one. We have struggles. I can only imagine what it would be like to have to go through five different marriage relationships, and now here you are, and the person that you're living with, they've made no commitment to you, so they could just up and leave tomorrow. And so she was struggling with this. She was dealing with guilt. Don't believe me? How do I know she was dealing with guilt? Because she was coming to the well when nobody else was there. You see, if I don't have to see people, then people don't ask me questions. And if I don't have to ask questions anymore, then I don't have to deal with the guilt that's inside of me. She was dealing with religion issues. Man, how do I get that one? Well, that's not hard, because when Jesus starts talking to her, where does she immediately go? There's a problem in my church. They can't figure out where they want to worship. Jesus, if you can fix that one, we can fix my problems. And Jesus is like, that's the wrong problem. But you get, she had all of this baggage. And she said all of this stuff. And I'm sure Jesus is like, maybe I should have taken a detour. Maybe there's another well. Maybe there's somebody else with less issues. Not the Jesus approach. Jesus was in the exact right place at the right time with the right woman, even though she was broken. Broken. You understand? We're Jesus, and the woman is the world, so that means we, the church, should be designing ourselves to deal with broken. That's not easy. That takes time and money to deal with broken, because broken has to be fixed, and it can't be done easily. But at least Jesus does give us an approach. How can I go out into the world and meet somebody's needs? I mean, I'm just me. I have limited resources. I mean, I got enough needs of my own. Don't you understand? I got two kids, a wife, a job, a church. I've got things to do. I understand. None of that is more important than this. There's nothing more important than this. And so it's funny, when Jesus started, he started by allowing her to meet one of his needs. Now, I want you to see how this worked, because this is a shrewd man. This is a guy that gets people. Because all of her needs were at the emotional level. So Jesus starts back with saying, hey, look, I got a physical need. I'm going to open up myself to let you see where I have needs and give you the opportunity to meet one of my needs. That's important. Because it was a need she could meet. He didn't make this complicated. I mean, this was really simple. They were at a well. He was thirsty. She had a bucket. He didn't. She could get water. He couldn't. So he just said, hey, look, can I have a drink? And at that moment, this woman who had been walking back and forth to this well by herself for who knows how long had to stop and think, well, what do I do with that? Here is somebody else. Nobody ever asks me for anything. And here is this guy asking me for a drink. And then she looks at him, and well, he's a Jew, and he doesn't look like he belongs here. Maybe he's lost, or he wandered in the wrong place. What else is he going to ask for if I give him the water? She could have done all of this kind of stuff. But he engaged her in a non-threatening way. Now, this is important to us, because if I'm going to go out there into that world, I can't go out there with my shotgun loaded, ready to show people who Jesus is. Say, look, I'm just going to spray the gospel out there and hope some of it sticks. You understand? We're not saying that. We're saying we have to have a target. And when I have a target, then to be known is to be loved. And to be loved is to be known. And I want you to get to know me. I want to be more than two eyes and two ears and nose and a mouth. I want to be a person that you're interested in, not just because I can do something for you, but because you are interested in who I am. And so Jesus is engaging this woman in a non-threatening way. He doesn't start off by quoting scripture at her. He doesn't start off by telling her all the bad things she did in her life and telling her she needs to get her life cleaned up. What does he do? Can I have a drink? And then after that, here's an important thing. He shut his mouth. He just listened. I mean, this woman could have easily said, sure. She could have took her little bucket. She could have went down into the well. She could have drawn a bucket of water. She could have held it out to him. She could have let him have the drink. And she could have just went on about her merry little business and say, I did my good deed for the day. But it's interesting what happened as she began to meet that need for Jesus. Instead, she chose to start up a conversation. Did y'all pay attention to that? All Jesus did was ask for a drink. She brought all the other stuff to the table. She's the one that started the conversation about racism. Well, you're a Jew, but I'm a Samaritan. Why are you asking me? She's the one that brought up about her husband. She's the one that brought up about her religion. She's the one that did all of this. All Jesus wanted was a drink of water. But then he was quiet. And he just allowed her life to open up right in front of him. Now, we kind of squish things in the Bible because we put things in chapters and verses, and we think things started like just this little bit of time. You know, it was like a 15-minute conversation. I got a sneaky suspicion that there's a lot more to this script than the words that we get in the book of John. I got a feeling this conversation went on much deeper. John just kind of gave us the abridged version, because if we got the whole version, we'd never show up to do the sermon because it would be like maybe 100 pages long. I got a feeling this was a big conversation. We just get the highlights, and well, He brought her face to face with her visible issue. Now, this is important because, this woman had issues. And Jesus was all about solving issues. And if you're going to solve issues, eventually you have to be willing to talk about issues. Now, again, there's something for us to learn from how Jesus approached this woman's issues. First of all, he did not beat her over the head with it. He didn't look at her and say, "You dirty, rotten sinner, I know how you're living, and I know what you've been doing, and I know about all of this. And you know what? If you don't straighten up, this is going to happen, and that's going to happen." And he didn't do that. As a matter of fact, who brought up her issues? Her. I mean, she's the one. And when he did, Jesus didn't take the moment to say, "Well, you know what? It's wrong. It's just wrong." No. He didn't judge her. Jesus had a habit about this. They brought in the woman that was caught in adultery, and they threw him before him and said, "She needs to be stoned." And Jesus said, "Fine. You without sin, cast the first stone. Go ahead. Stone away. But I'm not going to judge her." And even when they were all gone, what did he say? "Were all the people that condemned you?" Well, they all left. He said, "Well, I'm not condemning you either, but I am going to acknowledge your sin." He didn't ignore it either. You see, this is where we mess things up. We think that if we ever talk about a sin, that means we're judging people for a sin. No. Understand, he didn't judge her. He didn't sit down there and say, "Well, if you do this, this, and this, this is the bad thing that's going to happen to your life." But he also didn't ignore the issue. He didn't tiptoe around it like it was a minefield. As a matter of fact, when she brought it up, he dove straight into it. When he said, "Go get your husband," he said, she said, "I don't have a husband." He said, "Yeah, I know. You've got five, and the guy you're living with, he's not your husband either." He didn't ignore the issue, because what was going to happen? He had to discuss the issue. You have to get to the root of the problem if you're going to meet needs. You see, he understood her issue was not sexual. Yeah, I can use that word in church. It actually is legal. Okay, I looked it up. I didn't see a law against it. Her issue isn't sexual. And a lot of times we think that people that are caught in relationship issues, that it's just all about sex. Let me just give you a key. I've been a youth minister for 17 years, and I've told every kid it's never about sex. It isn't. You know what the issue is? It's all about lonely. You're trying to stuff and meet another need with a physical need. You're trying to meet an emotional need with a physical act, and that's not going to work. And so Jesus didn't give her a lesson about sex. He gave her a lesson about lonely. Isn't that what he did? Now, how did he give the lesson? He stayed at the well. I mean, it would have been very easy after he told her what her problem was to say, "Now, you need to go to church and get this straight," and then just left. That's not what he did. He hung out for a while. He discussed the problem with her. He let her talk about it. He let her bring up the other issues in her life. And he pointed her to him. See, he understood. He couldn't fix the issue by arguing her out of her sin. I'd like to know anybody that's ever had any excess with arguing somebody out of sinning. If you've had excess, will you please write a book so that I can read it so I know how you did it? Because it does not work. You cannot argue somebody out of sinning. Okay? And trust me, I'm a good arguer, and it doesn't work. But he kept driving the conversation back to himself. Look at the words that he used. "Everyone who drinks this water being the well water, they will thirst again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." You get what he's doing. He's taking the physical water that they're talking about, that they're interested in. He's saying, "You know what? This stuff is good. But you got to come here every single day to get this stuff. I know about a water that once you get it, your issues are solved." And man, what a hook to dangle out there, because it's kind of like, just reel them on in, Jesus, because now she's like, give me that, because if I come here, I don't have to deal with my lonely issue anymore, because now I can sit in my house and I don't have to come down to this well anymore. I don't have to deal with these people anymore. My isolation walls can stay up, and I can just, but Jesus said, "You know about that living water? It's right here." See, because then they went into the religion conversation, and then she started talking about religion. And then eventually, who came up with the idea of the Messiah? It was her. And when she brought that up, Jesus pulls out the 2x4 and says, I know. This guy that you're talking about, this guy that you're looking for, lady, he's standing right here in front of you. What a message the church has. The lonely issue, the confusion issue, the sexual issue, the physical issue. Folks, we're standing right in front of them with the answer. But we've decided, you know what? I don't want to share that because that just takes way too much time and money for my energy. You know what? Let me just come here and sit in my pew and sing my songs and do what I'm supposed to do. And I'll go out and I'll sing this little light of mine, maybe go down the road once in a while, and we'll just be a good testimony that way. And Jesus said, nope. That's not the solution. The solution is at the well. You see, he never allowed the conversation to move away from the woman having a relationship with him. She tried. She did. She wanted to talk about worship. She wanted to talk about whether or not you were supposed to, whether or not she had to go all the way down to Jerusalem where there were more people that she had to go deal with, or whether she could just stay in her little area of Samaria and worship. Jesus said, you know what? I don't care where you worship. Pick a spot. I don't, we could do this right here at the well if you want. I don't need this because you know what? You don't need more worship. You need more relationship with me. You don't need more husbands. You need more relationship with me. You don't need more judgment. You've got plenty. You need more relationship with me. Everything he said just kept driving this woman back to him because he understood it was her greatest need. You see, what if he had done the impossible? Well, I guess it wasn't impossible for him. He could do anything he liked. But suppose he had actually given her literal living water. Suppose he had given her Samaria's first indoor plumbing system that she could take back to her house and she could set it up and she could just hold her cup out anytime she wanted and she could meet that need. Would that have solved her problems? No. Suppose he could give her the perfect mate that would never leave her. Suppose he could put somebody in her life that she could share the rest of her life with. Would that solve her problems? No. You know why? Because that's only this life. We still have another life we have to worry about because he's more interested in the eternal life. You see, he got it. He understood. He was the answer to the need, but to get to that answer, he had to wade through all the other stuff that was out there. See, I think as the church, sometimes we're so interested in feeding them Jesus, we forget to set the table by meeting their needs. We think we're just supposed to go out there and throw out the name Jesus like it's some kind of a token. It's like, oh yeah, we get that. They don't get it. I'm sorry, they don't. They don't. We did a mission trip to New York when I was a teenager. Actually, I was an older teenager because I was a leader in the youth group at that point. And we went up there and we had prepared all this great program that we were going to do. And we got up there and we thought, oh, well, surely they know John 3:16. They didn't. Some of the kids we were dealing with didn't know how to sing Jesus Loves Me. And we're like, really? They don't get it. And that's okay. They're not supposed to get it. If they got it, then God wouldn't need the church. He'd just take us on to heaven when we're done. We come out the baptismal, we just go on up. He wouldn't need us. You see, it all comes down to this question. Are you willing to meet needs? See, if we're going to take this vision seriously, then yes, we have to get out into the community and we have to begin to meet people. And as we meet people and we learn about people, we have to see their needs. And the first thing that should come to our mind is, wonder how I can meet that one. Wonder what I could do for that one. Wonder how I could help fix that one for them. We should become the world's ultimate matchmakers, not matchmakers in boy and girl, matchmakers in need and solution. Because that's the churches that are growing. That's the churches that are out there doing the things that they should be doing. That's the churches that people understand, they get. Because they come to church because they're like, you know what? I don't know, I understand everything or believe everything that they say, but I know there they care about me. Because they took the time to get to know me. And to be known is to be loved. And to be loved is to be known. And isn't that the need that we're all trying to fix? We want God to know us in such a way that when our life ends and we are standing before him, he says, come on in, because I know who you are.